Hey, hello, folks. Welcome to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher back with you again today, and what a beautiful day it is. Coming to you from our studios in Daytona Beach, Florida. It is A-OK here. Clear blue skies, probably about 74 degrees, and pretty good wind out of the southwest, but all good here. Feel sorry for our folks and friends out in Minnesota and upstate New York. They're freezing their butts off right now, but all good down here. Everyone's coming to Florida. Anyway, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Daytona Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram for their loyal support through the years, and particularly our driver, Mr. Daniel Dye, who's competing full-time this year in NASCAR Xfinity Series. And, man, I'll tell you what, he is doing so well. We were up in Atlanta. He finished 7th last week in Las Vegas. He finished 12th. And this week we're down in Homestead, Florida, for the race down there. So if you can, tune in and listen to us live. Daniel will be carrying the Race to Stop Suicide and the Solar Fit colors across America to bring attention to something we're very, very passionate about, and that's the Race to Stop Suicide. Anyway, I've got my good friend back with us after many, many moons, and I'm very, very happy to introduce him because he's got something very timely to talk about, Mr. Brian Termal. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Bill, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. I'm glad I passed the test and got the invite back. So.
Well, I'm sorry to say that I caught you on the road. Are you driving now? Or are you parked where we can talk?
Oh, no. I parked. There's no way I'd be driving and run the risk of being on my cell phone during a highway work zone. Where I work, that's a firing offense. So
oh, man.
I'm stopped and I'm in a safe spot.
So you're over in Texas, I understand.
That's right. I'm halfway between Houston and McAllen, Texas right now. And because it's Texas where I'm pulled over, it seems to be some kind of large barbecue operation. So,
well, I would pull right in and I'd order some brisket if I were you.
That might be my next move. We'll see how it goes. I don't want to be weighed down for this conversation. So.
You're right. Well, Brian, I tell you, the timing could not be better about our conversation we're going to have. We write a monthly article for the Beacon newspaper in DeLand, and the article is going to be all about what you and I are talking about today. So very, very glad to be able to help in that regard. Brian, before we get into your position as Vice President of Public Affairs and Workforce with Associated General Contractors of America, tell us where you grew up.
Sure. I grew up not far south of you in a little town called Stuart, Florida, which for those of your listeners who don't know where Stuart is, it's on the east coast of Florida. If you were to start at the top of Lake Okeechobee, go due east, when that line hits the ocean, you basically hit Stuart, Florida.
You know, we were talking before the interview about the fishing capital of the world. I mean, you know what's really odd here, Brian, is to go deep sea fishing off the coast of Daytona, you got to ride for about an hour and a half out into the ocean. By the time you get out there, you're beat up, right? So I went down to Stuart to fish, and like, it's right offshore. The Gulf Stream goes right offshore. You can see people. It's got to be fun.
Well, that's one of the reasons my dad ended up choosing. My dad was a doctor, right, Bill? And he ended up choosing to go to Stuart, A, because the air smelled better than up in Brunswick, Georgia. Sorry for your Brunswick listeners. And B, because he wanted quick access to fishing. But the problem for him, Bill, is that he was convinced that he knew the faster way through the inlet than the one that was marked by the Army Corps of Engineers. So half the time we were trying to go fishing, we ended up on a sandbar in the middle of the St. Lucie Inlet waiting for the Coast Guard or a tow company to come get us off that sandbar.
That's amazing. And I bet you caught some big fish out there, didn't you?
Well, he definitely did. He thought of himself as like a Hemingway-esque, that he was out there catching the big fish, you know, and certainly it was a lot of fun. I have a lot of good memories. But my brother and I, frankly, because we didn't have access to his boat when he wasn't working. And as a doctor, he worked all the time. So we did most of our fishing right off the dock in the St. Lucie River, which is a brackish river. And so we ended up catching a lot of catfish. And occasionally you'd actually get a stingray that far up the river.
Jeez. Well, you know, that area, especially during COVID, Brian, was really, really hard hit. And I went down there not too long ago. And, man, it has just sprouted back big time. Cape Canaveral, that whole area has just grown tremendously.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty area. I grew up in Stuart. My mom now lives in Fort Pierce, and we're kind of halfway between Fort Pierce and Port St. Lucie. And so we went down there, took her to lunch right in downtown Fort Pierce, and it was hopping. You know, they had the streets closed off for St. Patrick's Day. They had a kind of flea market going. They had a band playing. you know, the windows of the restaurant are open. There's this breeze coming in off the Indian River, you know, right into the restaurant. It was lovely. It was like a postcard for living in Florida.
That's why everyone's coming down here. It's crazy. You know, last week I went down to watch the launch to bring the stranded astronauts back, right? Wow, yeah. I could not believe it. Now, not only was the rocket launch beautiful, but they came back down with it, the launch vehicle came back down, mm-hmm. and they landed that thing on a lily pad. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like 2 minutes after the launch, here comes this thing back down and tonk, right down. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, they've really revolutionized and space travel or space operations, and they've made it by being able to reuse those boosters. They've made it a lot more. I mean, it's not affordable, but they made it a lot less expensive.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. Well, gosh, we could talk about fishing all day. But actually, the only thing I ever caught in my life was a trout. Although I did go to Alaska, and I caught a big fish up there. What is a big bottom fish up there? I can't remember. But I'm not much of a fisherman. That's the name of the game. Brian, let's talk about, so you grew up down there. Okay, how did you end up in Washington running this big organization?
Well, you know, I actually ended up in D.C. I was going to save the world first. I was in this program called Teach for America, which takes recent college graduates and puts them in either rural or any inner city school districts where they have teacher shortages. So after college, I applied, got into the program, and got assigned to D.C. And I knew so little about D.C. at the time. I was like, what, they got bad schools? And so I taught second grade for 2 years. In inner city D.C., which was an interesting and ultimately an incredible experience. But after that, I met, and one of the best things that happened to me during that experience, I guess, is that I met a local and fell in love with her and got married. And so, you know, I was stuck in D.C. at that point, kind of worked for a number of positions, ended up being a Fed right after 9/11. I started working with the then brand new Transportation Security Administration. And which was an interesting experience, and then ended up at the Department of Transportation, and then joined AGC, 16 years ago? And AGC is the Associated General Contractors, and I've been loving it ever since. It's a ton of fun, and the reason it's fun is our members are just down-to-earth, really pragmatic people who every day wake up with their boots on and get stuff done in this country, which is kind of a nice toxic from living in D.C.
I love it.
Or tonic, I should say. Nice tonic from living in D.C.
Well, I love it. I love the whole thing about that. It's just the whole entrepreneurial spirit is what grew our country to be as great as it is, and we want to see that continue and flourish. And I think what you're doing there is so important. So tell us about what your job is there.
Well, I'm head of public affairs, and I handle workforce. So I guess the best way to put it is, especially when you think about the top priorities for the construction industry, is I spend a lot of time talking about workforce needs for the construction industry to anyone who will listen, and frankly, many who won't listen to us, about why we need to do a better job investing in construction education and training programs in this country. And while we do that, you know, find a better, more rational, less bonkers way to get people into the country to work in construction in a way that, you know, is traceable and taxable and, most important, lawful.
Well, I know we're going to get into the topic about how scant we are as far as the number of workers that are actually going into the construction business now. And, you know, Brian, you're younger than me. I can tell just by the way we're talking. But, I mean, when I grew up, we had all these trade schools, and you weren't really compelled, or you didn't have to unless you wanted to go to college or university. You could be a plumber, you could be an electrician, you could be a carpenter, and all these trades that were so important. Are we not feeling the lack of that now, or is it just my imagination?
No, we're absolutely feeling the lack of that. Somewhere in the early 1980s, federal policymakers got together and concluded that since we were heading towards a post-industrial economy, that we needed to put all of our eggs, all of our educational funding eggs, if you will, into one basket, which was encouraging every high school student to go to college, get a four-year college degree and the debt that comes with it, and work in the so-called knowledge economy. Now, look, there's a lot of people for whom going to college has made sense. They've had good careers. It's fun. I'm not begrudging that. But we forgot, in our zest for encouraging everyone to go to college, we forgot that there are other career paths out there. many of them really good career paths. But construction pays nearly $37 an hour on average nationwide. And most career pathways into construction don't require a four-year college degree and all that debt that comes with it. So because of that, those decisions, though, we essentially dismantled what you and I probably knew as vocational education programs in most schools. So the average high school student in the U.S. today never gets exposed to construction, neither the skills they need nor the fact that it ought to be on the career map. And because they don't teach it in schools, it's kind of come down the rung in terms of what parents want their children to do. So imagine how many dinner conversations, you know, around the kitchen table have gone something like, you know, junior or juniette comes home and says, I want to work in construction. And mom and dad are like, heck no, you're going to college and getting a real job. Forgetting the fact that, like, with construction, you could actually own the car you're driving far faster than all those people who went to college because they're paying off college debt and making about the same money as the construction worker.
Boy, I tell you, Brian, you really hit the nail on the head. You know, I think back in the 80s when this really started to happen, and it was kind of an insidious growth, in my opinion, because when it first started out, it just seemed to make a lot of sense, and there wasn't a lot of debt involved in going to college. Man, I'll tell you what, it has changed now. The amount of money that it takes to borrow to go to school, the amount of time it takes it back is just, it's flooring. And the point you're making where if the folks that wanted to be involved in the construction industry in a short period of time could own their own business and pretty much write their own paycheck or at least work for a company for 30 years.
That's right. I can't tell you how many men and women I've met in the construction industry. It's an older book now, but there's a book called The Millionaire Next Door, which is about, you know, kind of the quiet people who own their own businesses, who drive a truck and don't own fancy clothes, who have a higher net worth than someone like a lawyer or a doctor who drives a fancy car. The construction industry is home to the millionaires next door. Time and again, I've met people who started as a carpenter. They started as a laborer. They stuck with it. They worked their way up the ranks. They made a leap of faith. They bought a business, and they've done well. They've done really well for themselves. But the problem now is that, you know, we don't have enough people to keep pace with demand. So those same millionaires next door, if you talk to them about how's business going, we do this for a living at AGC, they tell us that, look, it's great, but there's so much work out there and I don't have enough people. I'm not bidding on projects. So what does that mean if you're not in construction? That means that, you know, say you were hoping to get your local high school renovated during the summer because your kid want, you know, you want a nicer pool for your kid to swim in or a nicer gym or a nicer computer lab or whatever it might be. If fewer firms are bidding on that school renovation, it's going to cost your school district that much more. And they may actually decide, you know what, this is too expensive or it's going to take too long to do. We're going to put this project on the shelf. Or say you were hoping for a new factory to come to town, right? You know, someone wants to build an EV plant or someone wants to build a new power plant. And that was going to create a lot of good jobs. But now because construction costs more because we don't have enough people, they may not build that EV plant, right? We're spending all this time right now talking about tariffs in this country. And one of the main reasons the president is using tariffs is he wants to encourage manufacturers to come back to the U.S. What an irony it would be if companies who wanted to come back and build manufacturing plants in the U.S. couldn't because our labor shortages are keeping construction firms from bidding on that plant work that they want to get built, and it no longer makes sense to come back to the country.
Yeah, amen to that. Where do you think the main issue lies? I mean, you know, there seems to be plenty of people that can go to work, but it seems to be that a lot of people aren't going to work. Is that my imagination? Is that something that's COVID-related? What's happening out there?
Well, certainly labor partition rate. Certainly labor participation. There we go. Labor participation rate are lower than they have historically been in the United States. Now, that to some extent, that's, you know, so-and-so's on disability and not working, or so-and-so's on benefits and not working. But a lot of that is just plain demographics, right? We have an aging population in the United States. And if you look at the demographic trends, that's not going to change, right? Our workforce participation rates are going to keep going down because the percentage of the population that retired, they're old enough to retire and are retired, is going to continue to grow relative to the working age population. So what does that mean if you are thinking about your career choices? you're going to be in a job seeker's market for a long time, particularly in an in-demand profession like construction. Like, you can't actually build a factory overseas, pop it onto a truck, and ship it to the United States. It's still a labor-intensive segment of the economy, and it's always going to be. So they're good career paths. So, you know, what we're pushing for as an association, what I spent a lot of my time talking about, Bill, is let's put that funding back into career and technical education so we can expose more people to those career paths. And at the same time, let's understand that it's going to take a couple of years to rebuild that domestic pipeline for getting people in the industry, right? It's just going to, we took us decades to dismantle voc ed. It's going to take at least a couple of years to put it back together. But we're not going to stop building as a country, right? We're not going to stop developing economically. We're going to need to build, fix our highways, build factories, improve our schools, put a new police station in. So let's put in place a reasonable, a logical work visa program for people who want to come to this country responsibly, lawfully, put their boots on every day, be part of building the American dream, and let's create a construction-specific visa program that's temporary, that's timely, that's taxable, so that we can get workers into this industry in a way that I think most people would feel comfortable with.
Yeah, you know, Brian, that is, we're up against the break. I can't believe it went this quickly, but man, you talk about common sense. Brian, hold on just a minute. Folks, hold on. Come on back. We're about 30 seconds to 60 seconds. We're going to talk more with Brian. We're going to learn more about how we can put people to work in America. Right back with you.
Hi, folks. Bill Gallagher with SolarFit here. Have you ever thought about utilizing solar power for your home or business? Well, there's never been a better time to plug into the sun and stop renting electricity. How would you like to let your roof start paying you each month? Give us a call at 445-7606, that's 445-7606, or visit us at solarfit.com and set yourself free.
SolarFit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy.
Hey folks, welcome back to the SolarFit Renewable Energy Show. I'm speaking with my friend Brian Turmel, and we're talking about employment opportunities here in the United States. Brian, you made so many good points before the break. You know, something popped in my mind that reminded me of, it reminded me of the airline industry, right? You know, right now we're kind of in a bind because all of these older pilots are retiring and we're trying to fast track people to come into the industry to learn. And boy, it makes you a little bit nervous because we have to do this at such a rapid rate, and we're flying these big planes around with people and stuff. But in the construction industry, man, if you look around out there, a lot of these people are older and retiring, and the people newer are coming up. You made a good point. It's going to take a couple of years to get back on track. Talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, you know, like you said, we've got an aging workforce. I mean, if you go to the average age in construction keeps ticking up. I think the last I saw, the average age of a construction worker in the United States was something like 47 years old, which just makes my back hurt thinking about. But and in fact, you've got construction firms out there that are using things, kind of sci-fi-y things like exoskeleton suits, so that someone can actually do physical construction work longer in a more protected and safe way. But yes, we absolutely need to realize two things, right? We need to do them at the same time. We need to start putting more money into career and technical education. There's a bill in Washington called the Perkins Act. That Perkins Act funds all of the high school career and technical education programs. Again, what we knew as vocational education. We spend less on the Perkins Act today than we did back in 2001. Yet we've got more students today, and we've got more need for positions like construction than we did 2001 because we had a younger workforce back then. So we need to double funding at a minimum for the Perkins Act, right? Make it easier for school districts in Daytona Beach, Ormond Beach, around the country to create those career and technical education programs to expose students to construction, get them thinking about a career in construction, get them onto that pathway. Kids are bright. I mean, let's give them more credit than they are. If you expose them to five or six different career choices, they're going to gravitate to the ones that make the most sense for them, right? There are kids out there that are saying, I don't want to do construction. I don't like being outside. But for every one of those, there's another kid that says, oh, my gosh, I can be part of a team. I can build stuff that's going to last for decades. I can be outside some of the time. I can have kind of a changing work environment, so I'm not in the same fluorescent-lit cube day in and day out. where do I sign up? Like, let's show them the menu of choices and let them make an informed choice. We'll be surprised. Most of those kids will. The other thing to think about when we boost that funding for career and technical education, and, I'm lucky. I get to visit a lot of these sort of construction high school programs that still do exist in the country. And every time you go, a teacher will tell you about that student who just couldn't do a good job in school. Like, algebra was a nightmare. English was a nightmare. They got bored in class, so they were probably acting up a little bit. And then you put them on a piece of construction equipment, and they're a wizard, right? They're doing things that 30-year veterans, equipment operators couldn't do. And all of a sudden, that student feels like they are the best student in the country because they're doing something that they're better at than their peers for the first time in their life. So let's invest in career and technical education because it's good for our economy, but let's also invest in it because otherwise there's a segment of the student population that doesn't like learning on the dry erase board but may be highly skilled. And if we tell them that there's a path for them to be successful, they'll feel successful. So I don't mean to preach, but it's like a former teacher in me. But yes, I think we absolutely need to look at that as a sane investment, but we need to be realistic. Like, even if Congress were to double funding tomorrow for career and technical education, even if Tallahassee were to triple funding for career and technical education tomorrow, it's still going to take years to rebuild that pipeline. So what are we going to do? Are we just going to say, all right, everyone, we're taking a 3-year pause on construction until we rebuild that domestic pipeline? No, we're not going to stop building water plants or highways or ports or energy plants or EV car factories or regular car factories. So we need people to build them now. And right now the answer has kind of been undocumented workers. And we appreciate that people don't like that. And more important, it puts those workers in a position where they can be easily exploited because they don't have the right paperwork. And then unscrupulous contractors can underbid responsible ones. So that doesn't work for the economy. It doesn't work for the people. So let's create a sensible, we call it H-2C visa. The H-2B is kind of the temporary visa program right now. Most of those go to hospitality, like ski resorts or water parks. But let's create an H-2C, C for construction visa program, where we let people, as long as their needs, you know, as long as there are job shortages in the industry, let people come in lawfully. We know where they're from. We know their background. We know where they're working. We know that we're taxing them. And then at the end of that tenure, either they can have a path to legal status that they earn, or they can go back home and share their skills and help develop their country. Either way, it's a win for our economy. But we shouldn't lose focus on, we need to reinvigorate that domestic pipeline.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense, Brian. You know, I was thinking as you were talking there that the construction industry has changed just like all the other ones. I mean, you can be involved in the high-tech area of construction, robotics or anything like that is still construction-related, or you can get on a DW21 grader and run it, but you've got a source of pride that you're doing something and you're making a living and where you might not get it, say, in a classroom somewhere. It makes perfect sense.
You're absolutely right. And, you make a great point, too. Like, so, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone. So much when we talk about workforce needs in the construction industry, we're talking about craft workers, equipment operators, iron workers, laborers, carpenters, HVAC technicians. We need those folks. But you're right. It's a fast-changing industry. And you know what else we need? We need people who have robotic skills. We need programmers and coders. We need marketing experts. We even need accountants and lawyers, right? We need all kinds of things, particularly as you see more and more robotic equipment, autonomous equipment, GPS-enabled equipment on construction sites. We have as much need for tech-specific people as the tech industry at this point.
Yeah, for certain. Brian, I want to give you a chance to talk about how people can visit your website. Can you tell us what we should look for?
Sure. So we're so passionate about trying to redevelop the workforce and do it in a way that makes sense that we created kind of a special resource center for anyone who wants to learn more. It's a website that we call workforcedoneright.org. So just type in workforcedoneright, all one word, .org. And we've got lots of information about our workforce needs in construction, why we need to spend more money on career and technical education, why we need this H-2C visa program that's for construction. And the other thing that's on that site, if people are interested, and we'd love it if they were, is if you want to be heard, if you want your member of Congress to know that we should be investing more in teaching our children construction skills, and at the same time creating a lawful, responsible pathway for people to come into this country and meet that need while we rebuild that domestic pipeline, there's a button you can hit right on that site that will, you know, that will find your member of Congress for you and help send them a message. Now, I don't know about you, Bill, but I don't actually have, well, in D.C. we have a delegate. We don't have a member of Congress, but I don't have my delegate on speed dial. Most people don't have their member of Congress on speed dial. So we make that easy for you. Just hit the button and it'll send an email, or you could tweak the email to use your own words to your member of Congress.
You know, you're so right about that too, Brian, is that people just, there's so much limited time, and they may be driving a car right now, and I'll get to that later, but it's so easy. You just go to your website, and you push the button, and you find out who your congressman is, and write them a letter. Tell them that you want to see this move forward. I mean, I'll bet you a fair number of people that are listening in today have kids, or they may be even in the workforce themselves, maybe in a job that they don't like, and they don't understand there's just so much opportunity.
That's right. And if they go to workforcedoneright.org, they can learn more about those opportunities. And more important, they can have a say, right? We feel sometimes powerless, but you can actually have a say, a voice in creating a more logical kind of workforce development program in this country, one that creates opportunities for their children and, frankly, opportunities for themselves if they're looking to make more money and you know do something that they might be really excited about.
Yeah, don't forget out there, folks, sometimes the kids come home and they're back in the house. This is a good way to put them out on the workforce. I love to see that. That's just something that's happening, I guess, in the last few years where more kids are coming home. I don't think my father would have wanted me to come home when I was like 20. What do you think, Brian?
Oh, no. I've got a 22-year-old, and I'm thrilled as can be that he found a job and he is living on his own. And I think most parents, look, it's nice to see them. It's nice to see them on holidays. Yeah. But we do ultimately put all that time, energy, and emotion into parenting our children because we want them to grow up to be successful
exactly.
And independent.
Exactly.
And if the other pathways, kind of the sort of college and office job pathway, hasn't worked out for your child, and it's not, there's nothing wrong with it, then there are other pathways that are out there that are just as rewarding emotionally and financially, and one of those is construction. It's okay to see if that's something that might be a pathway for your child. You might end up, you know, being the next millionaire next door as opposed to the child in my, I guess there's a basement in Florida, the child in my attic.
Right. Oh, man, that's awesome. Brian, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a great conversation, and I hope the folks listening out there will take heed and go to your website and become active and help put America's
absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, Bill. I was just going to say, and if they are driving, please remember to slow down and pay attention in a work zone. Sorry, I had to get that in.
Yeah, please don't go past the work zone. We got plenty to do. We got roads to rebuild. We got bridges. We got potholes everywhere. We need people to work. Well, folks, we're going to sign off for now. Brian, thanks again so much, sir, and wish you good luck. We'll have you on again in a few months so we can talk more about it. How's that sound?
Would love to. Always happy to hop on, Bill. Just let me know.
Sounds good. Folks, okay. Well, listen, don't forget to tune in tonight. CW, watch us down in Homestead as we cheer Daniel on to a podium finish. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.